And now, a sermon from South Highland Presbyterian Church in Birmingham, Alabama. Established in 1888, South Highland has a rich history and tradition of sound Bible teaching in our historic sanctuary. Listen now to the word from South Highland.
If I were to ask, many of you could think of a story about a time when you were having guests, maybe family, maybe it's your turn to invite the whole family for Thanksgiving or for Christmas dinner. Maybe you were having your boss over for dinner, and something goes awry that puts you into a bit of a muddle right before a super important occasion. Maybe the power goes out an hour and a half before people get there, and that puts you an hour and a half behind on cooking the family turkey for which everyone will be craving the minute they walk in the door. And the worst part was you were going to vacuum the whole house while the turkey was cooking, and you didn't even get to do it. I'd be willing to bet that Jesus and his disciples, or the disciples especially, Peter's household, were excited about having Jesus. He was going to be an important guest. They wanted to do their best. They wanted to put on their best. They wanted to honor the best they knew. And here Jesus comes, and the mother-in-law is sick. The one who's probably in charge of hospitality, the one who's probably a revered and honored member of the family, there to greet the honored guest. And she is sick and cannot be present with them in the way that she expected. Isn't that the way life happens in our families? We look for the best, we're ready for the best, we're preparing, we're giving it our best, and something goes haywire, something goes unexpected, and we find ourselves starting an important time or greeting important people not in an orderly, controlled, and genteel fashion, but breathless and right in the middle of a muddle. That's what today's message is about: how we invite Jesus into the muddles that are the reality of our lives and where that takes us as we go. Now, the first thing we want to recognize is that they didn't postpone for another time. And many times, I believe we Presbyterians are really good at this. We don't want to do things sort of half-cocked, right? We want to do things what? Decently and?
In order.
I had an executive coach once that I was working with, and, you know, the pastoral ministry, he coached a lot of pastors, and I was telling him about all our procedures and all our plans and all our book of order and all the steps and interim ministry and all this stuff. And, you know, coaches are supposed to kind of work with what they've got. They don't step in. And he said, "May I have permission to say something?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Man, you guys have got so many procedures and spending so many time looking back at umpteen stages of history and everything. Do you ever have a chance to go forward and do something new?" And so we want to do things right. We want to do things decently and in order. We're great at task forces and planning and all these things, and I believe this passage invites us to spend a little less time getting everything perfect and a little more time inviting Jesus right into the middle of the muddle and the mess that is often the reality of our family lives and our churches. Anybody ever kind of looked around at your family and said, "This is not one of our best moments"? Maybe often on Sunday morning, or right before company is coming, or all these things. And Jesus invites us to invite him right into the middle of that family. My siblings and I had a pretty great upbringing by almost any standard you can imagine. We had two sharp parents who were people of faith, who reached out, who led us in family devotions from as early as I can remember, who read us Bible stories at night and had us memorizing scripture before we went to school in the morning, that took us not only to church every time the doors were open, but for Pete's sake, on family vacation, they took us to a Bible conference. All my kids at school said, "What did you do on vacation?" "Oh, we went to the beach." Right? "We went to Tweetsie Railroad. What did you do?" "We went to a Bible conference." It wasn't a beautiful place in upstate New York, which was further than a lot of my classmates had traveled, so that got me a little better. But for all that great and idyllic family upbringing, I guarantee you, when my siblings and I get together, usually, sooner or later, there's going to be a joke about, in our family, we're working hard to put the fun back into dysfunction. No matter how great your family is, no matter how you've worked hard, no matter how all the principles you've gotten, our family, for Pete's sake, has two ministers and two therapists, marriage and family therapists in the background, but that doesn't get us out of the muddle and the muss of simply being finite human beings. And it's into those families that we're invited to ask Jesus to come today. Not after we get it together a little more, not when we're in our best moment, but right here, right now. I was at a pastor's conference years ago where the then pastor of one of the larger Presbyterian churches in the country described a time earlier when he was an associate pastor in a different one of the largest and best known Presbyterian churches in the country. As he prayed a somewhat extemporaneous prayer of confession on behalf of the congregation, he had some notion that he was going to get real. And in the confession, he said something like, "We confess our moments of anger like last night when I put my fist through the drywall at our house." And his wife thought, "Oh, this is the last Sunday he's going to be here." And he told us it was interesting that he got more response to that prayer of confession than to any prayer of confession he had ever prayed. A lot of people said, "That's the kind of confession I need to make sometimes about our moments of family life." And I suggest it's often the kind of confession we need to make about church life. So, our families, whether they're glorious and wonderful and healthy, as many people have experienced, no matter what they are, there are always little pockets of hurt feelings that just don't seem to go away. There are regrets about either decisions made or opportunities missed that still hurt us. There are slights and wrongs, whether small or little, or great, that just seem to make it hard to ever finally forgive. And those are the families that Jesus invites us to invite him to come into to provide healing and hope. And that healing and hope is never just so we can have a cozier family life, or we can put more of our energy into consumerism and making money, or that we can have a better little oasis from all the hardships of the world around us into which we can retreat. That healing is always in order that we may rise to serve. Now, if Jesus is really in our family life, if Jesus really shows up in our church families, it's not going to be long before the word gets out. And when the word gets out, people are going to come from everywhere who need healing and hope and acceptance and love and blessing, and up to now have largely been dismissed. There is a well-known pop singer in our culture who calls herself Mother Monster and all her fans Little Monsters. And she assures her tens of thousands of young people, many who have been rejected or denied or who come from dysfunctional families, who are maligned as unsuccessful and a threat to the educational enterprise by their teachers. And she says, come to me. There's no judgment here. What a shame that those people and so many around us who desperately need hope, who desperately need healing, who desperately need acceptance and love, don't always first hear it from the church or from Jesus in the church. Philip Yancey, in his book, Amazing Grace, describes a woman who, because of her drug habit, had put herself and her toddler child through unimaginably bad things and had sold herself and had been homeless with her child and often a neglectful parent and all these things. And one of the friends said, have you thought that there might be help with Jesus? Have you thought that you might go to the church for help? And Yancey, in telling the story, said she looked at her questioner and recoiled in absolute shock and horror. She said, I already feel so terrible about myself. Why would I ever want to go to church? Friends, when Jesus is present in our families and when Jesus is present in our church family, people will come out of the woodwork that often in the name of Jesus or religion, in this day as in Jesus' day, the people who've been badgered, the people who've been bullied, the people who've been berated, the people who in some cases have been physically beaten up, those are the people that when Jesus is really here are going to say, I want to go to him. I want to be with him. I want to be loved by him. I want to be accepted by him and any of his disciples who are truly his disciples. The kinds of people that often are not wanted in our neighborhoods, that are inconvenient for nice, upstanding religious people like me, and I presume like many of you. The kind of people who will always make a little bit of a mess of our carefully crafted programs and worship services and will never be reliable giving units for our glorious church institutions. When Jesus is really here, people will come from everywhere to experience his healing, his hope, and his love. But here's the last thing. Jesus wants to clean up, if you want to say, wants to provide healing, hope, blessing in our community. And we want Jesus to do that too, because if Jesus can get some of these people straight that we haven't been able to get straightened out, then our neighborhood will be a little more pleasant. There'll be fewer undesirable and unpleasing people around in our sphere of view or in our sphere of influence. And so while Jesus was praying and reminding himself and asking God for empowerment for his mission and his commission, the disciples are back. Jesus, you still have a lot more work to do in our community. It still needs a lot more cleaning up. There's still a lot more people interested. There's still a lot more people that need your help. And what did Jesus say? He said, there are still a lot of people that haven't heard yet. There are still a lot of people that haven't experienced the kingdom of God I'm announcing. Month. What better passage to remind us that no matter how many needs we ask God to address in our own lives and families, and no matter how many needs we ask God to address in our communities, that God is always on a mission beyond. And I love Brian McLaren's description of what we probably need in this day, in this age, is to get to God 5.0 and say, well, what are the first 1, 2, 3, 4 versions of God? The first one is the one we experience as infants. You know, as an infant, what do you want? Not much. You scream when you don't have what you want right then. And your parents' only job is to make sure that the second you scream, there's a bottle or a cookie or a teething biscuit or whatever it is in your mouth. And a lot of us are right there with God. God's job is to give us what we want soon. Oh, yeah, and to clean up the messes we often make. That's God 1.0. God 2.0 gets a little better. We're maybe in preschool, and we hit our playmate the third day in a row because each day they wanted to play with the duck we were playing with. And God 2.0 might come through the voice of our teacher or our parents that says, hey, let's all be nice to each other and let's remember to share. And so with God 2.0, at some point in preschool, you actually decided on the fourth day, I'm not going to hit my playmate. I'm actually going to hand the duck to them, though I'm pretty sure they are not remotely capable of handling something so precious. That's God 2.0. God 3.0 we encounter in our adolescence usually, and that's the God of fairness. That's the God who makes the rules and makes sure everybody keeps them right. And so God makes all the rules that allow us to say we're the good people because we keep them, and everybody else out there are the bad people because they're still on their way somewhere. And that God's job is not only to give the rules, but to enforce them. And we want to make sure that all the people that aren't doing right are punished. We'd prefer right now, but at least someday, that they will get everything they've got coming to them. Not us, God. We're trying to be good, but those people need to get everything they have coming to them. Maybe, and preferably, and by the grace of God, many of us get to God 4.0. And that's when we get beyond the God of rules and selfish demands, and we actually learn to begin to make sacrifices for one another. We look at the congregation, and we actually sacrifice time that we would rather use in other ways and places in order to lay down ourselves to some degree for the well-being of others. In some cases, we make pledges that say things like, in sickness or in health, in wealth or in poverty. And we learn together as a family about community, and God 4.0 is the God of we. But here's the kicker, and I believe this passage hints to us of the God we're still coming to know. Brian McLaren says 5.0 is needed because the God of we is still the God of family and tribe. It's still the God of my family, my culture, my country, my religion, And God's job is to bless us and take care of us and scare other people enough that they'll learn soon enough that they need to become part of our tribe, our church, our religion, our cultural practices in order that they may thrive and prosper. One of the darkest secrets of the Christian faith is the doctrine of discovery, which was provided by the Catholic Church and enthusiastically lived out by all the Protestant churches, that said, in order that we might further the glory of God, we will count on God's power to go to the new world and make sure everyone we encounter either converts to our God, the right God, and our way of religion, or we are authorized to slaughter them, to enslave them, and to appropriate every bit of property they have for the sake of us, our God. We are acting in the name of God. And when our forebearers said, in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, we, the people, they invoked the name of God, but you need to understand it certainly wasn't including women, certainly wasn't including people of other colors and cultures. And we're still working out what it means to get beyond the God of we, to get to the God of all the earth. It was Jesus who found the best example of faith in all the Gospels in a pagan soldier. It was Jesus who healed the Syrophoenician woman's daughter, even though there were plenty of nice little Hebrew babies that needed hope and help and healing. It was Jesus who gave us the example of a woman, a sexually confused person, and a Samaritan who Jesus had the longest conversation with recorded anywhere in the Gospels, and we have the example that she's the one that brought her whole village to Jesus. It was Jesus who nearly got thrown off the side of a hill when he reminded the people in his hometown that there were lots of widows in Israel in Elijah's day, but it was from a Canaanite widow that he experienced the blessing of God and saw the power for the salvation of God's people. Friends, the God that invites us to this table is the creator of all the earth and the God of all the earth, and he invites us to invite him into our families, our muddled lives, our religious activities, our communities, and he invites us to keep right on walking with him beyond our family, our community, our religions, our tribes, our countries, our ideologies, our cultures, because he still has places to go that all people might find their place at this table. May it be so. May it be so.
You've been listening to The Word from South Highland. Be sure to subscribe so you can take these messages along with you anywhere, anytime. For more information about our church, visit southhighland.org. We'll see you next time.